Okay, gathering back together. So, any reports from walking around the city with open-hearted awareness? Any sense of any reports first, even before questions, any reports from the morning, any kind of, or from lunch, or any sense of what you're noticing or curious about? Yeah. We have the mic traveling around here.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when I can unhook and then I get into space, what happens is that I get into usually in some stillness. So yes. I have a sense of stillness and things arise from the stillness. And then drops away.
Yes.
And then there's, I think I get back into my thinking or something happens where there's this sense, okay, something should be happening now.
Yeah.
You know, this sense of, where is awareness? I should see awareness. and then I can see that, I drop back.
Yeah.
But there's this sense I'm missing something. I'm not quite sure what.
Yes. So, I mean, curiously, because it is so, the feeling of awareness is invisible, it's not an object, and it's not thought-based. When you first shift into it, it is like an absence or like, yes, and what am I doing? Like, what's happening? Nothing? Am I bored? So you have to be willing to be bored by peace of mind. And wait out the absence and the freedom and the sense of stillness until it kind of, and keep feeling a little bit toward it, curiously, even though you're not finding anything, rather than leaning into what's happening. Because as soon as you're aware of the awareness that's aware of the content, and as soon as you start to become interested or fascinated with content, or create a meditator or a mental curious part, you're out. So it's the willingness to find this no thing that is the essence of awareness, and being willing to be bored by that patience, like the equanimity and the okayness and the well-being, the absence of drama and the absence of mental feedback. Yeah? Is that helpful to hear? Yeah. Yes.
What's the difference between that knowing from intuition or the third eye type of intuition knowledge?
Yeah, I think they're kind of almost like types of consciousness that are subtle mind. So intuition is kind of a subtle mind awareness when it contacts kind of a sense of gut feeling or information. It'll kind of go along a line to give you an intuition about something, which sometimes can be really good and sometimes can be a little caught by fear or worry. Intuitively feel that this is not right, and then you realize, oh, that's because I was picking up these signals and I don't know if that was right. And so my intuition kicked in to save me, protect me. So there's something about it. Sometimes I do call it, to give a metaphor, like as if it's continuous intuition, because you're not going to thought, but it's a little different than intuition in that it's more like flow consciousness. And third eye gives a little more information about specific view. Yeah. So this is kind of the source of all consciousnesses, which is pure awareness. Then it comes into consciousness thought consciousness, eye consciousness, hearing consciousness, intuitive consciousness. Those are types or patterns of knowing and organizing. So, any other fun facts?
Well, to go back to that first question, should there be a sense of sort of physicality to the awareness when it's in space, not when you're focusing on a body part, but with moving around?
Yes. Yeah. So this is the thing, is in some ways, again, the kind of navigating of consciousness is we're so identified either with a thinker or with body consciousness that we're in this cloud of, and we're trying to clean up the cloud, you know, and fix, you know, replace negative thoughts with positive thoughts, and then we clean up this side, and then we get over here, and we start cleaning this up, and then this is the mess again, there's some storm over here, and then we're, so we're doing some mindful move is to step out. So we got to step out into either a mindful witness and do mindfulness of contents, or step further out to be in this pure awareness, this boundless, timeless awareness that feels like it's aware by itself without our help, and that's the effortless awareness, effortless mindfulness. And then, as that awareness, we're able to be aware of thoughts, feelings, sensations, and come back, and now we can include from the sky, the cloud, and thoughts, feelings, sensations, then there's a feeling of embodiment and interconnection and aliveness that feels like the same contents of consciousness are here, but they're felt very alive, but not as mentally interpreted. So we don't want to get stuck in the disembodied first steps, first stages. So you want to check that and kind of be aware of that, and then from that back. So it is this little kind of dance of untying this knot, untying this knot, untying this knot. And once you get a feel for it, it's not that complex a system of consciousness. It's, you know, kind of five stages. It takes, it's so new that it takes a little, you know, curiosity and tuning in and clarification. Is that really awareness of space, or is space awake? And then you have to kind of get a feel for that. It takes the same amount of time to learn this effortless mindfulness as it does to learn deliberate mindfulness. So I've taught both insight meditation and this, and both have a learning curve, and both are new techniques, and both are, you know, have skills, and both start with kind of getting some things well, and other things are hard, and you take some time and you learn it, and then you get better at it, and then you get results from it, and then, you know, so there's nothing, even though this is kind of advanced form, doesn't take longer. It's not harder, it's just a little newer. The first principles, which is what you're dealing with kind of on the first morning, is a lot of new, like, what? Not knowing that knows? That knows what? Nothing? How? Who is the one who doesn't know what they know? You know? I know. No, not I know. Not I. The other I. Oh, that I. So it's a little kooky. A little trippy at first, but then it's kind of ordinary. It's kind of like once you get a feel for it, like, oh yeah, okay, no, no, oh, yeah, oh, oh. Then you get this feeling of liberation and embodiment. That comes over time. Yeah. So this is, you know, something that's taught, you know, 2.5 years into the 3-year retreat. So, you know, you should give yourself more than a morning to learn it. You know, in the Tibetan system. Yeah, so it's kind of giving you the, all right, let's go for it. Here we go. Because it, the way it's designed in my experiences, it's not, if you know that your parts could get scared, there could be a doubting part, there could be a protective part. But other than that, if you just let it know, I'm just going away and I'm coming right back, that you don't open up and get flooded and you don't end up too spaced out and you don't end up a couch potato in the not knowing. You go to the not knowing that knows, that's embodied, that's open-hearted, that can immediately start to talk and walk, and then you lose it and you just start again. But it's almost like, because it's the fullness of the whole map of awakening, you don't get caught in one of the eddies, you know, going down the river. And so it's safer. Safer, and that's kind of what I'm trying to, if I'm, you know, reporting anything, is that it's safe, it's been reported as good to very, 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 very good. Extremely good. So that's good. Yes.
So I think I get a pretty good sense of how this feels and looks in normal circumstances. I'm just wondering how it looks in, like, circumstances that are more confrontational, like if you were being, I don't know, stampeded by some elephants, or more likely if you're at work and there's some kind of confrontation there, or at home, or what have you. How does it feel in those situations when, assuming you haven't exited the zone, you're still in the zone, how are you responding to those situations?
Yeah, so this is a good question because it has a simple answer in terms of this method. Is there's no wise guy that can tell you that the answer to all questions, how will that be in this situation, is I'll show you how to shift. You shift, be that, and show up, and then you tell me. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's good. It's, you know, I mean, you can't, but it's almost like you can't describe it. It's just so intuitive and clear and less reactive. And if a reactive part shows up, I'm either caught by it. If I'm not caught by it, I'm aware that there's a reactive part that wants to say, oh, yeah. And then I'm aware of it. And I'm like, okay, it's okay. And then I meet somebody who's, you know, using my name in front of their agitation and going, you, and I'm like, oh, they're really upset. And, you know, wonder what's going on with them. And then I feel like I respond. But that's kind of only for you to know. It's basically like a real upgrade of everything. It's more loving, it's more generous, less reactive, less fearful. It's like the energy. One of the other things that a couple people said last night is that if you're a very sensitive, highly sensitive person, and you're used to, like, if somebody's energy is strong, you kind of take it on, you become more porous. So with more space, it's like someone goes roar, and they send, like, a hot potato, it goes right through you, like gossamer curtains, just like whoosh. And you feel what they're upset about, but it doesn't impact your body, it doesn't stay in your system, you don't take on their energy. It just feels like you have so much more space. There's just so much more space in your life. You're in the now, so time is just totally different. There's so much more space in terms of time, because everything's slow, and you kind of feel spacious and in the now. And there's a view from a kind of a generous heart, that you feel like everyone is you, and what do they really want, and why are they, you know, what's going on. And then people start to resonate with you. There's kind of a mirror neuron kind of thing that starts going on, where you're kind of responding. You're not reacting to their part that's reactive. You're kind of talking to their real self, and then they kind of go like, oh, yeah. oh, never mind, about that thing. They're just connect with you, and you feel like in the best times that you've had in your life, it's like that. Like most of the time, when you felt your best self, that's kind of who you are. With when you're with your friends and you're having a good time and stuff happens and you respond, that's the more nature of who you are and how you can live. And the thing is, you can't, and the reason I responded at first is because you can't think that, you can't try to do that. You can't do that through attitude. You just won't get there through, I'm going to be more compassionate. I'm going to be more compassionate. I'm going to be more loving kindness. I'm going to be more loving kindness. You can only get to a certain degree. It helps to a certain degree, but it's not the compassion with a big C that when you shift into this sense of self, that naturally is just like, oh my God, look at, you look through these eyes of compassion and everyone's just like, wow, we're all suffering and we're all okay. And what are we going to do together? How are we going to figure this out? You just feel hope and you feel sensitive heartbreak. And it's all kind of part of but there's such capacity for support. Like you've tapped into something greater than yourself. That's the essence of yourself. And that has this feeling of that everything's okay, which gives you the motivation to take care of stuff that's not going well in your personal life and your community life and in the, take actions for social justice and for other actions and feel like you do it within the right size and your particular gifts and talents, not trying to either save the world or yourself or feel despair and hopeless, so you might as well not do anything. You start to just take these small actions, these natural steps, you work with community, you feel like you have capacity, and then you go have fun, and then you go hang out, and then you go to work, and then you, but you're buoyant, living a full human life with more emotional capacity to feel tenderness and love, not a deadened life. There was a study that showed like these long-term Tibetan meditators who are doing this kind of practice and then college students, and they were measuring like anxiety, baseline, worry, fear, self-referencing. So the college students were starting up here and the long-term meditators who do this practice were starting here. And then they put the earphones on them and played the sound of a baby screaming in pain. So the college students went up here and then kind of had a hard time coming back to even their baseline. It took them a long time. So then here's the question. So then the long-term meditators, college students went here. How many people guess that the long-term meditators went here? And how many people say they went here? How many for the first one? They went here, less reactive. How about more? Yeah. So more reactive and then return to baseline very quickly. More, not reactive, but more emotional, more sensitive, more responsive, more sensitive, more like, oh my God, this baby screaming. Oh. And then not associating with it. So more fully alive because the capacity of what's aware of the brain and the emotional system is so resilient and has such capacity that you can feel so alive and then like feel like, a horn honks at the corner and you jump and then you can kind of return to your life. You're not associating, oh my God, I can't believe these people in New York and how can they live in here? What are they doing? They should change the street signs and the people and the mayor and he's off, trying to campaign. He should be running the city. And the whole thing is, that reminds me of my sister-in-law. So that's that thing. Yes, I have one. Somebody who hasn't said it. Yeah. Here? Yeah. Right here in the blue. Yeah.
Years ago, I read the Dalai Lama's book, Happiness. And one of the things that struck me was the viewer asked him if he ever got angry.
Yeah.
And he angry. You know, I'm human. The difference is that I forgot how he put it, but he basically drops it and comes back to baseline yeah. very quickly, much yeah. more quickly than most people. Yeah. But he does get that rise.
Sure. Yeah,
and so that sounds very much like that's what it. You're saying here with
yeah.
the Tibet.
So it's not kind of flatlining. It's really developing the capacity to be fully human, to have, and then, you know, what he gets angry about is not every little thing, but it's like something that's like, something's happened to a friend of his who's been put in prison or something, you know, and he'll be like, oh my God, you know. So it's, you know, it's a big event, but this, you know, this is the capacity to have this loving self, to be ordinary and fully here in this life. Yeah. So shall we do one more? Okay, one more back here, and then we'll do an exercise.
So I'm used to Vipassana meditation, which is very effortful and I guess mindful. When I yeah. sit down and actually have a meditative practice in the morning.
Yeah.
So this is clearly quite different and somewhat yeah. at odds to that, but I like it because it has involves less effort. But is there still a practice that's associated with it? Is there a yeah. deliberateness that comes with actually practicing this kind of awareness?
Yeah. So just to say simply, you know, this is traditionally you begin with deliberate mindfulness and go to effortless mindfulness. Some people just practice deliberate mindfulness in retreat setting or in monasteries, and some people start with just effortless mindfulness, but in many traditions, effortless comes afterwards. And the simple difference is in deliberate mindfulness, you're aware of the contents of the consciousness, and effortless, you're aware of the context. In deliberate mindfulness, you're aware of the four foundations, thoughts, feelings, sensations of the experiences, you're labeling them, you're noticing they're coming and going, and in the effortless mindfulness, you look behind the camera, you open to the more spacious nature of mind that then is aware of itself, and then when it's aware from itself, you're aware of thoughts, feelings, sensations, but not as objects coming and going, but almost as a waves of the interconnected field and the ocean. And you're able to actually, from this spacious mind, you could effortlessly focus on your breath continuously without distraction for, I don't know, I've done it 3 hours in a row without getting distracted. So, because you're aware, you're doing mindfulness from the spacious mind, which isn't coming and going, rather than trying to do it from the small mind, which is coming and going, and so you're going to be distracted.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.